Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who always looks ahead, even when parallel parking, Pete Chwaba.
Welcome back. As we kick off hour number two of Nightlight, broadcasting live statewide from beautiful downtown. This is a gorgeous summer night, and I think it is pretty much all over Wisconsin. Great stuff tonight, just a beautiful night. Tomorrow night on the show, Andrea Belke will be here. She's the host of Discover Wisconsin and a survivor from the show Survivor. So that'll be exciting to talk to Andrea about some of her experiences. And then Alan Talaga will be here. He has the hit show Paul Blart 3, which apparently takes place during an apocalypse. It's a stage show in Madison that is going on the road. I'm very excited to talk to Nathan about that. And Aunt Carla checks in on our clown question tonight. She says, go Baraboo, the proud clown, circus heritage. The proud clown. Tony, there's your next movie, The Proud Clown. I love that. Tony Boswell is here. He's agreed to stick around with us a little longer tonight. And great catching up with you, buddy. So, all right, I want to talk about this before, you know, just in the event we run out of time, because this was one of my most memorable nights working the road in stand-up. Even though it was just Milwaukee, that club was always great. The crowds, one of my favorite rooms ever to work. It was so much fun.
It was the cafe, right?
Comedy Cafe on Brady Street. Yeah. And the staff was fun. And I remember we went back to the apartment where they put us up, which was kind of kitty corner from the club. And there was a few valet guys and waitresses. One of the owners might have been there. And we were talking forever. And we went down into the basement because we had heard that a restaurant called Giovanni's used to have bootlegging tunnels to that very apartment. So we went down in the basement. It was like, I remember it as being like 12 people. And we were feeling the walls where they might be. I don't know what we were going to do if we found one, but it was a fun night.
Yeah, I do. So everybody would always go back to that condo across the street and party after the shows or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember there was like did we have to like jimmy the door to get into the stairwell to get downstairs? Somewhere we ended up against a door that we couldn't get through.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's coming back to me now. But we did not find the tunnels. But the idea that we were looking for them, and it was like an Al Capone's vaults type thing. It was our Geraldo moment, I guess. And we never found it, but it was just fun. It felt like kind of an adventure, you know?
Yeah.
That was a really fun night. Do you have a lot of road stories? Did you like working the road?
I did for, 25 years. The last few, it definitely got tiresome, you know? We at a point, like I was on the road all the time, and my wife, who had a great corporate job, she became a traveling consultant. And so at that point, we just basically flipped.
Wow.
I stayed at home, and then she would travel like Monday through Thursday as a consultant.
Nice.
And then, I was fine with it after that.
Did you just
do local things?
You've worked or you've lived in North Carolina, right? Chicago. You started in Chicago, then you went to Carolina, and now you're in the Pittsburgh area. Have you noticed different are crowds different in those different locales?
Well, by the time we moved here, I had already stopped, but I used to do Pittsburgh all the time for the Funny Bone chain. And Pittsburgh and Chicago are so similar. Blue collar neighborhood mentality. People are friendly and, they let you in when your turn signal's on. And in the South, never felt at home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I remember, we're liberal Chicagoans, and I would put up our Hillary sign, and then like within moments, the Trump sign would come out the window across the street, So it was very combative.
Okay. Yeah. So you weren't going to go out there and start cracking jokes to your neighbor is what I'm taking away from this.
I never backed down. And, where we lived in the Charlotte area was kind of a transplant area. It was a growing suburb.
Right.
So like on our street of the 40 houses on that street, I think there was one person that grew up in Charlotte.
Oh, no kidding.
Everybody else was from, you know, Philadelphia, Chicago, you know, Maryland. They were from everywhere.
It's kind of how LA was. And I liked that about it. You could always find your people, you know. Yeah. There was great Wisconsin bars and Chicago bars that I ended up really enjoying. Do you have, it's interesting, like with club owners, we talked about this a little bit the other day on the phone. You have all these club owners. To a man, it seems like nobody hates, there's not one that everybody dislikes or one that everybody loves. Did you have one you didn't like or were ever mistreated by, or did you have one you loved who was good to you?
Club owners?
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, club owners. Comedy club
you know,
owners.
I think you and I talked on the phone last week about Jeff Schneider here in Pittsburgh.
Right.
It was always great to me, but a lot of people hated him, you know?
Right.
He would, there's a famous story of somebody sent him a video back when we used to literally send video cassettes right. of your act.
Yeah.
And then the guy calls him like a week later. I sent you my tape. Did you watch it? And Jeff's like, oh, you're Dumbo. And the guy's like, what do you think? My act was dumb? He goes, no, I recorded Dumbo over you for my kids.
And that was my relationship with him. Like,
yeah.
He really irritated the living daylights out of me a couple times. And we've told those stories off the air. I won't go back into them now. But then he would make me laugh. And I'm like, damn you.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't want to be hilarious. Laughing. And there were a lot of owners like that that just kind of drove you crazy. But then there were some, you know, whatever. I guess everybody has different relationships. But
you know who's one of the best to me ever in Chicago? Bill Brady. You remember Bill Brady's comedy capers? It was a room where you weren't allowed to say the F word.
You know,
the harshest you could usually be was hell or damn.
Right.
And but it was very hypocritical because he would do like, you know, gay jokes.
A lot of gay
and
jokes,
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I started out there when I was, you know, first starting. I was an opener. And then I showed up one day. I was, you know, for my booking. And I was the middle. He didn't tell me ahead of time. He just showed up.
Wow.
You're the feature act today. And then a couple of years later, I showed up for my feature gig. You're the headliner now.
Whoa.
And then from then on, yeah. I mean, just you're ready. You know.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Just gave it to you with. Yeah. So I mean, I always respected him for that.
Yeah, I always liked Bill too. I felt bad at times. Like whenever there was a holiday at that club, he would go all out. Like if it was Valentine's Day, Bill would dress up as a Cupid and do his act and open the show that way. And I remember, I think it was either Brian Noonan or Mike Siegel and I showed up and we were just dressed to do a show. And he goes, gentlemen, thanks for wearing red. Really sarcastic. And we're like, what? Like, we're not going to do that, Bill. And he goes, that's why they're here, guys. Like he scolded us. And then another time and Siegel told the story the same way. He's like, he said something. I think Bill was dressed like he was at the beach. He had sunglasses on and a straw hat and a bathing suit. He was going to go up and open the show like that. And he said, and Mike Siegel goes, hey, Bill, nice threads. And he goes, Malibu Rum Night, Mike. I just kept walking. You know, like, oh, that was fun. Yeah, Bill was always good to me.
I tell you the flip side of that for a road story. Do I still have time?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Zanies, which was also very good to me over the years.
Yeah.
You know, like when my son was born, Bert booked me to be house MC for a month at every club. So
nice.
I got to stay in Chicago for like 4 months straight after my son was born, which was fantastic.
Very
But
cool.
The first time I ever worked for them, it was downtown. I was the MC. It was 10 shows. Remember when the week was Tuesday through Sunday?
Yes.
With three Friday, three Saturday. Yeah, and you got $50 a show. So I got $500 to be the MC, which was great, you know, for somebody just starting comedy.
Yeah.
And then a couple years later, I got promoted to feature act. The year they cut the pay for the feature acts down to $500 for the week. And then the first time I got promoted to headline for them was out in St. Charles, which was a shorter week, Thursday to Saturday.
Yeah.
$500 to headline.
You
over 10 years, I always got my $500.
That Tony Boswell drives a hard bargain. That's going to cost us 500 beans. We got more people checking in on the stream. Do either of you know comedian Dobie Maxwell? Of course I know Dobie Maxwell.
I know Dobie very well.
Carolyn again, and then Craig Anthony Kennett says, Gags the Clown had some popularity in Green Bay and the state. Creepy. Totally agree, Craig. And then Carolyn says, yes, Dobie was at Zany's many times. Yes, he was, Carolyn. Thank you for checking in. I've worked with Dobie several times. Tone, on this show, what we do typically is talk about what we're watching. So are you binge watching anything you can recommend to people or seeing any summer blockbuster films that you could recommend?
Well, yeah, I went just Deadpool, which I was waiting for.
Okay.
You know, I thought it was great. But my wife and I binge watch, you know, that's our routine. Basically, after dinner, we go through stuff, but we kind of burned out everything. You know, we're waiting for the new crop of stuff to come out.
Yeah.
So Vikings Valhalla, we're about to start the final season of that.
That's good, huh? And
yeah. Well, the first two seasons, we watched the whole Vikings series, the original Vikings one.
Yeah.
And then this is sort of the spinoff series.
Okay.
But really excited for Severance, which is coming back.
Yep.
Have you watched Severance?
I have not watched Severance.
Oh, definitely. Hi, Adam Scott. It's a great sci-fi comedy business. Yeah. Severance high on the list. Silo, The Last of Us.
Did you like The Last of Us?
I did.
You know, I it was weird. I liked it, but I felt like Walking Dead did it better. The first season of Walking Dead, anyway. It was weird. I don't know what it was. It's not like I didn't like The Last of Us. I was just like waiting for something, and then they would do a totally different episode, like with Nick Offerman and. The actor from White Lotus. It was great, but it was sort of like it took you totally out of the narrative over the series. And, you know, they made it work and it was a phenomenal episode. It should have won awards if it didn't. But
I thought Offerman was going to get Emmy nominations for that for sure.
Yeah. Hey, we got to do this again, buddy. This was fun. We'll
absolutely carve out anytime.
Carve out more time next time to talk about movies and color television. But great catching up.
Well, one note, I have all these like jokes I was supposed to work in today, so I'll have to save some, but I got to say this one.
Okay.
To remind everybody that peach schwaba is John Rigi's favorite flavor of ice cream.
That's great. Peach schwaba, order it off the menu. All right, we got to go. Thanks so much, buddy. We'll do it again.
Thanks, man. That's
Tony Boswell. Tom Lennon coming up next on Nightlight with Peach Schwaba. I feel it's happened to me, and I'm telling you, it's too late to turn back now. I believe. Seen her dressed in blue. See the sky in front of you. Great to have you with us on this amazing, fun summer night here in Wisconsin. We are broadcasting statewide from beautiful downtown Green Bay. I'm very excited to welcome this next guest to Nightlight. I've been excited to have him on for a while, but he's a very busy guy, but he has been gracious enough to join us tonight via stream. You might know his work if you've watched Reno 911, where he plays Lieutenant Jim Dangle. I hope I'm getting the rank right. I think it's Lieutenant. He's also written The Pacifier, Night at the Museum, several other films, and he joins us tonight on Nightlight. Tom Lennon. Hey, Tom.
Pete, it is great, great, great to see you, Pete.
You too, and buddy.
You.
You know, it's weird. Most of the way I keep in touch with people now that live on either coast are on this show over the StreamYard. So I'll take it, man. If this is all I get of Tom Lennon, I'm thrilled to have you.
The weird detail, though, is I'm not really that far away from you.
Oh, no. Where are you?
I'm in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
You know what? I saw that.
You know I live in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, right?
I didn't know you lived there. I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
Like full time?
Exactly what douchey Illinois people are supposed to do.
Well, you're better off. No, we used to go up to like when I grew up in Chicago. We'd go up to Three Lakes and Eagle River. So you're
My mom grew up going to Eagle River, and they would go up and. The big thing to do at the time at Eagle River is they would go watch bears at the garbage dump at night.
Yes.
Because the bears would come into the dump and you could just go watch the bears. And that was you know, for a family of seven, which they were, that was a nice, that was a reasonably priced evening of Eagle River garbage dump bear watching.
With the hint of just enough of a hint of danger to make it exciting. That's
oh, for sure.
I know your parents because I've met them a few times because they would come to screenings of the film we did together, The Godfather Green Bay. They're very nice people.
Anytime there was a screening of that, they've been at it. Yeah.
They were great. They were in Madison, Wisconsin,
and
I was just blown away by that. It was so nice of them, and they are just lovely people. Are they in?
For a long time, they lived at in Williams Bay, which is the other side of the lake. We're on the south shore of the lake.
Yeah. Okay, that's a heck of a rivalry there when it comes to
for sure
high school fencing.
Well, it's a bummer they've got the Wrigleys on their side. So
that's right.
Yeah, that's north side of the lake's got south side of the lake's got me and Tito. Of Tito's, and then north side of the lake has, you know, Wrigley's and you know, the Armor hot dog people.
Oh yeah,
you know, there's it's more old-timey stuff on the north side of the lake. Yeah,
it would be really cool if you had like a contingency of Tito's, like Tito Puente, Tito Jackson, and like
we got to get some more Tito's on this side of the lake. Yeah, currently we just have one. I mean, we have a very good one, but
that's an impressive one. Yeah, are you guys now? You're there full time? Are you just kind of commute when you have to?
We lived here full time for the first 3 years that we lived here. Now we're back and forth to Los Angeles a little bit, but
okay,
we're predominantly in Wisconsin just because I greatly prefer to be in Wisconsin. If I'm given a choice in the matter, I like being here. So.
Well, good for you. I have to say, I've been here now 13 years, and I miss LA a lot. I miss Chicago at times. It's easier for me to get there, but it's so easy to live here, Tom. That's what makes it kind of enjoyable.
The quality of your life is just night and day between, you know, one of the first days that we lived, we were out here at Lake Geneva, and the lake had frozen over. And we were walking out on the frozen lake, and there was a weird sound that I was hearing, and didn't know what it was. It was just a little tick, tick sound that kept happening. And then I found out what it was, and it was actually the sound of snowflakes that were landing on my, like, hard shell jacket.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
But it was so quiet that I could hear individual snowflakes landing on me. And I was like, wow, this is a really interesting, cool place to be.
It's like the most soothing sound ever. I know
it was
exactly
really
what you're
neat. Yeah,
about.
Yeah.
Well, that's so cool. That adds a layer to this interview, which I wasn't anticipating. So welcome to Wisconsin.
No, I know. We can talk about all Wisconsin stuff. Thanks. Yeah. It's nice to be here.
On behalf of a fellow transplant. All right. I wanted to ask you, this is funny because I always think of you when I think about the time we worked together on The Godfather of Green Bay, which was
a great picture,
absolute...
by the way. If you haven't seen it, I mean, everybody's seen it by now at this point who listens to your show, but that's a great picture of The Godfather of Green Bay.
Well, let me say, just before I turn this into a total stroke fest, what you did with that part, Tom, that was a lesson for me because I had only written scripts that had been sold. Only one of them ever got made. And I didn't realize what an actor brought to a role. And I was not prepared for it until I saw you and Lance in those specific roles. But you, with the way you just improvised and you just brought something to it that was a real education for me as a director. I had never directed before either, but so the feeling is mutual. And you gave me
a great thing to run with, which was really fun, which is Doug, the stand-up comic who just despises the Chicago Bears. To me, was like, I'm like, I just get this. I just know what this guy is. So all that really happened was. You gave me a real weird haircut. I had such a strange hair. I have like a weird flat top in the movie,
I?
Yeah. No, it looks really just weird, but I got this like that weird flat top. And then we would film in that I love that little bar that we filmed. It was in Marinette. Where were we? Marinette?
Was that the bar was actually in Menominee, Michigan, about 3-4 miles out of town.
Oh,
yeah,
we were
right
in the UP.
Across the river. Yeah, across the river.
I forgot we were in the UP.
Yeah, it was a really beautiful bar. And on the inside, it looked gorgeous. And
it was neat. It was really cool.
It was fun. I also remember you had a beeper that I think you added that, and that was just brilliant.
Now I don't. Now I actually might need to watch it again, but that's a very good idea.
So this was kind of funny. We had an offer out to you, I remember, and another actor who was, you know, pretty well known said that we had offered him a different role, which we already cast. He wanted to do this role. And so they made him an offer. And when we heard that you were interested, I was like, oh my God, pull the offer, whatever. And the producer.
Oh no, you fired somebody?
No, we didn't. No. And Brian said, no, you can't do that. We just have to hope this other guy passes. And he did. And we got you. And
oh,
I was
God.
Thrilled because right. you were also in another movie that I had co-written called The Guy Thing. And you were great in that. And then, but also as Dangle, you were phenomenal. And I thought you, I think what happened was we made the offer to you, if I remember correctly, and you thought you knew me from A Guy Thing, but you didn't realize it was the other writers that had replaced us. So you said, okay, let's do it. And then you met me and you're kind of giving me this look. And
I was like, no, I don't know you. Yeah.
But you had been, had a long flight and a 3-hour car drive. I don't think you were turning around at that point. So,
no, although I think I flew into Green Bay. It wasn't actually that far.
I thought you flew into Milwaukee and some PA gave you a ride and talked your ear off.
I specifically remember flying into Green Bay.
Okay.
I don't know how that worked, but I did.
Well, we spared no expense. So
you spared no expense.
There's no,
oh man, that was a, I just remember one night we were sitting in the bar with Mark Borchard.
Yeah.
And it was like 2 or 3 in the morning at the bar that we were filming at. And Mark said, well, I got to go, guys. And we're like, Mark, where are you going? He's like, well, the liquor stores are closing. And it was like, Mark, we're sitting at the bar, man. It's like going to stay open for us forever. And then, no, it was just so interesting. He was an interesting cat. Yeah.
I'll tell you this about Mark. I've tried to have him on the show. And Mark has been sober like for, I want to say like 15 years or something like that now. He is like a great student of film. And I've tried to get him on this show, Tom. And he's like, you know, Pete, man, it's not my thing. But he goes, I'm a huge supporter. Every tweet he shares, he is like a sweetheart of a guy. And he was so much fun on that set. But
yeah, it was fun. I might throw it on later tonight because I'm overdue. I'm very overdue.
Oh, when in Wisconsin. It's been a while for me too. So, all right. My guest is Tom Lennon. You know him possibly as Jim Dangle from Reno 911, a very funny writer and actor. He's joining us here tonight on Nightlight. We'll be back with more with Tom in just a minute. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network.
There's progress we have found.
All right, hanging out here on a beautiful summer night here, talking to my fellow Wisconsinite, I just learned, Thomas Lennon. Tom, so are you having a good summer?
It's been amazing. It's going by a little bit fast, but we've been having a beautiful summer. One kind of thing that's been kind of a neat thing, and we might get another one tonight, is down here in southeast Wisconsin, there was a period where we had 30 days of thunderstorms in a row this summer.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, we also had a couple of tornadoes, yeah, which was scary, but I'm a guy who loves a Wisconsin thunderstorm. And
same.
we just had them back to back to back to back to back to back. I mean, everything looks really lush. It kind of looks like we live in the Amazon right now here in southern Wisconsin. It's also, this week's been real, real toasty. But, you know, it's lovely here. We get out on the boat when we can. There's kind of a lot to do around Lake Geneva.
There's
a lot of stuff to do. We went into Summerfest in Milwaukee. We saw the Hold Steady. We've been doing cool Wisconsin stuff. We actually went into Summerfest twice, and then we went to... we were out in Madison and we went to Taliesin. You ever been to Taliesin?
I have not. No.
About an hour west of Madison is the big house that Frank Lloyd Wright built for himself and his mistress. Which is pretty interesting. Yeah. And it's got a pretty interesting backstory. If you're ever an hour west of Madison, it's very close to a house on the Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Crazy Old House on the Rock?
Years and years ago. But I'm in Wisconsin fairly often, and I always mean to go over there and check it out, and I don't know why I haven't. I've been going down there every month for the last 12 years. For some reason, I haven't made it over there, but I hear it's amazing.
Taliesin is really beautiful. It's a really cool thing to see. Yeah. We wanted to go to House on the Rock, but I think somebody said there was a fire there. It might have been closed for a little bit.
Okay.
Something weird happened at House on the Rock. It was always a curious old place, House on the Rock.
I think it was the mistress that set the place ablaze, maybe.
That's actually kind of what happened at... There was actually one of the butlers did burn down Taliesin with everybody in it. It's too dark of a story for nighttime radio. But okay. If you're ever looking for a Stephen King bedtime story, look up what actually just happened at Frank Lloyd Wright's house in Spring Green.
Conrad, take a memo. We got to look into that. I see a potential guest.
It's intense.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah. Hey, Tom. All right, so I've I've been meaning to ask you this for years. I maybe asked you years ago on the set of the film mm-hmm. of The Godfather Green Bay, but I don't mm-hmm. remember what you said. Where did the inspiration for Jim Dangle come from?
You know, that was a weird one. It was sort of a character I'd done in stand-up a little bit. I had been, I'd done this character who was a recruiter for Space McDonald's, and he was sort of like Jim Dangle, basically, except he had an eye patch. That was really the only difference. And then when we started doing the show, we'd basically been writing a sketch show for Fox, and it got canceled, like, basically at the table read, and they're like, we don't want a sketch show. It doesn't help us at all. And we're like, oh, that's weird, because here we are, and we have this cast, and we have a budget, and what
we just
we
ordered
do?
Lunch.
Yeah, we're like, you just fired us, and we're still lunch is coming. So we ended up, you know, we tried to come up with within 24 hours a show that would fit the Fox, you know, that would fit Fox on Saturday night. And you know, the biggest show on Fox on Saturday nights for 30 years was Cops.
Right.
So we were like, what if we just do like a sketch show that's like Cops? And it was a little more artsy fartsy in the pilot outing of it, because we in the pilot we played all of the characters, so there was never anybody else in the show. So like we would be all of the perps and we were all of the cops. And it was designed to be more of like, it was just going to be like little sketches you would go to, and we would always play the characters that you'd meet. But the cops weren't really the focus of the show. You know, they were just sort of like the thing. They were basically the sort of the thing that got you from sketch to sketch of meeting like funny weirdos with mullets and stuff. And after we did the pilot, the cops became much, much bigger characters, and we also stopped playing all the perps. And so that's when it sort of really turned into, you know, what it's been then, what it was then for, you know, 124 episodes and three movies, which is a lot. Yeah.
That is such an incredible run.
It's been a big run. Yeah.
I can't even. And, you know, I was reading about, like, I think I just went to your Wikipedia page for looking for stuff about you I didn't already know. And what I didn't know is you and Carrie Kenney got together when you were 16 at a camp.
Yeah.
And met each other, and she was in Reno too. And then it just became this snowball of, like, did you ever think that show could become what it was?
For sure. We never thought it would go 124 episodes, three movies. No. It's, you know, it's weird what you get known for, because Reno 911 is actually our third series, because the first one was The State. So Carrie and I have done, we did The State, which ran on MTV for quite a while. And then we did Viva Variety, which ran on Comedy Central for kind of a while. And then of course, a ton of shows in between that were just pilots that never got picked up. And then Reno, which didn't get picked up, because we actually did Reno for Fox. And then they didn't pick it up. So it sort of sat there for like 3 years. And then Comedy Central saw a tape of it that we showed them. And they're like, oh, let's do this. So Comedy Central ended up buying the rights to it from Fox, where it just sort of languished for a long time. But yeah, I actually thought, you know, after we shot the pilot for Fox and it was not picked up, I was like, oh, that's dead. And, you know, it was interesting, because then that would become the show that I thought was dead would become, you know, basically the main job of the rest of the quarter century of my life.
Wow.
You know, so yeah.
Did you? All right. So you're also, what I didn't know about you when I met you in person for the first time was, I think one of the producers said, oh yeah, Tom wrote, you know, Night at the Museum, The Pacifier. He's also a big time screenwriter. I was like, what? Like, on paper, Tom, based on all the success you've had in so many different avenues, I really shouldn't like you, but you have had a tremendous amount of success. And did Reno help the screenwriting, or did the screenwriting help the Reno part of your career?
I don't know. I mean, here's where it helped. I mean, what helped screenwriting, certainly being able to act and improvise helps your screenwriting. There's something different, like when I write a script, or, you know, that I've also produced more of my own material than, because I'm a producer and I also direct some of the Reno 911s. But
yeah,
you know, none of my, when I write something for you, it's not really theoretical, you know, like it's different. You know, there's a lot of writers out there who haven't had as much stuff made. And by the way, when you have a lot of stuff made I'm saying in a good way, but you get to see like the pitfalls of everything, you know? So you get to learn. I have on the job training for so long. I think I've done my, you know, my 10,000 hours in comedy, like, I don't know, three times, I guess now, or maybe wow. more, but you know, so like, I think the improvising helps the writing. You know, most writing is an improvised conversation with yourself, you know, and
right.
And so it's if that's a muscle that you get good at flexing, and it is a thing you can practice and get better at. Writing in general is a thing you can practice and get better at, same as improvising.
Right.
You know, and yeah, so I think improvising makes you a better writer. I don't think the screenwriting has ever really helped Reno, except for the fact that everyone thinks Reno's improvised, and somewhat it is. But there's also a very carefully crafted outline for every single episode and most scenes.
Hmm.
We never go out in the like field and are like, hey, let's see what happens. Let's goof around until something happens. Yeah, that's never, ever what we do.
That does not surprise me at all that you say that, because there are shows that have this reputation of being all improv. And, you know, oftentimes I watch these shows that are critically acclaimed and I go, they need a script. It's funny. It's got great moments. But I'd rather see something more concise. And I never got the feeling that Reno, like you just said, did that. You guys always were so on point.
You know, everybody's like, it's an improv show. It's a show where I think the distinction that we could make that's really true is it's a show where the dialogue is improvised.
Okay.
Which is, I think, the other reason, weirdly, most cops, I mean, a lot of cops that I meet, obviously they're talking to me, so it maybe ruins the experiment. But a lot of cops say that Reno 911 is the most accurate police show on television.
Oh my gosh, is that beautiful.
And I think I realized why at some point. It's like, not because it's always like, everything's horrible and everyone's dumb all the time, but it's just because we don't sound like someone wrote us, you know. We don't sound like we've been carefully honed by a crack team of, you know, just because we're saying the dumbest stuff that can come out of our mouths.
Do you have a script or a project that you wrote, maybe an example of each one, that got to the screen as close as possible as to how you envisioned it when you wrote the script, and one is far away from possible that's hard to watch?
Sure. There's two that I think are a good example of, like, one is just verbatim what we wrote, and that would be like Hell Baby, which is a movie very few people have seen. I'm super proud of it. It's just like a funny horror movie set in New Orleans, but a movie that's almost verbatim the script word for word, as close as the page as it could be, is the first Night at the Museum movie.
Wow.
And
really? Nice.
The reason is because the movie was going so fast and was in production, but all the you know, the special effects people had to start moving very, very quickly. And, you know, they had to have plates and they have to know where the T-Rex is going to be. And there's a lot of moving parts. So I think in a simple way, the problem sometimes with scripts is if you have them for a long time, the studio has them for a long time, they start to fix them. And with Night at the Museum, the finished movie is closer to our first draft of Night at the Museum than anything's ever been, which was really neat.
Well,
it was just a cool thing to see. And then furthest from what we wrote, that's tough. I mean, you know, I've never, like, there's never been a movie. Well, I will say our very first movie we wrote was called Let's Go to Prison, based on a script we'd written called You Are Going to Prison. And it was a really, really dark, like, prison comedy, and Bob Odenkirk directed it. It was really, really cool. And it had tested so well for a while that they went and shot it like a new ending to make it even better. And then the ending, which we did not write, kind of surprised me in the movie theater. And it was like trying to be real upbeat, but it was just something was really weird about it. And it kind of threw me for a loop. And it ended up, like, the movie was not really a hit, but I remember it was very different. I had seen a cut of it and I was like, wow, this movie's turned out awesome. And then I saw a cut, and then we went to the movie theater and bought a bunch of tickets to go see it. And I was like, oh, this movie's okay. It definitely just changed a lot from when, even from when we'd like seen the last cut of the movie. So, you know, you gotta, but it's also, you gotta remember when you write studio movies, you're, you know, you're a contractor.
Yeah.
You know?
My guest is Tom Lennon. He is a writer, director, producer, actor. You might know him as Reno 911's Jim Dangle. He is with us tonight on Nightlight. Tom, what, when it comes to comedy, and I'll use a guy thing as a perfect example of this. When that script sold, it got us a ton of meetings. People love the script and they love it so much. They keep reading it over and over and keep finding things to change. Have you, has that been your experience? Cause it was maddening for us.
Yeah. Do you remember there was a great line in my favorite movie about Hollywood called Barton Fink?
Oh, I love it.
Where Tony Shalhoub is talking about the head of the studio and he's like, he has taken an interest. What did you say to him? Because he has taken an interest. And it's like suddenly the studio head is very on, is very interested in what he's writing now. And it's like it ruins everyone's the good time they're having now that people are paying attention. But yeah, you make a good point, which is, you know, familiarity breeds a little bit of contempt sometimes. You got to be careful. You know, it's sometimes you just want to be the last person in the room. It's like always, it actually is always helpful sometimes when you're rewriting movies because they, people want to hear something new, you know, a new pitch on something. Also, a lot of times when people are making a movie in the studio system, it feels like sometimes people forget what the intention was.
Yes.
There's so much money and there's so many people involved and everybody starts coming with ideas. And sometimes those ideas, a lot of those ideas make it, are making it better. And a lot of those ideas are just becoming hats on hats on hats on hats. And you can actually start to lose the forest for the trees, you know, and start to kind of, you know, a big thing that in the script doctoring world that, that I've done my whole career is come in and look at a movie with the studio people and try to remember what they loved about the idea before the last year went by where they basically, you know, that's the other thing is like,
hey, Tom, hold that thought one second. Okay. Sure. We'll pick up there right next. Sure, we got to do a quick thing here. This is Nightlight with Peach Wabba. Tom Lennon's hanging out on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back. Tom Lennon is here with us tonight on Nightlight, helping me close down the show here. Tom, you were saying that before. It's kind of like too many cooks in the kitchen. Like everybody wants to make a great film. But
exactly. And sometimes those are made, you know, it's tough to make things with a big committee sometimes. You know what I mean?
Especially comedy, I think.
For sure. You know, it's or what you need, you know, you definitely need like a very strong opinion at the top who can't be messed with, you know,
right.
Is also very handy, you know, but you know, it can be tough and you can see it even in the rooms of the funniest people in the world, which I've been lucky enough to be a part of. I feel like a couple of times where, you know, people are coming in and like, they're going to round table a script or the movie's already done and you've looked at it and you're going to try to fix some stuff. And you know, there's a real tendency to get lost in the weeds in those, you know, where, where sometimes people are sort of being funny for funny's sake, but there's, you know, there's being funny, there's just saying funny things and doing funny things. And then there's like the entire concept of making a movie funny, you know, and it's interesting. Cause you know, we talk about it in our screenwriting book a little bit, which is like, there's a lot of guys who've written books about how to write an amazing screenplay, yet none of those guys have ever written a movie that made any money ever.
Right.
Which is, it's literally never happened. The only screenwriting book by people that have ever made a movie that made money is me and my writing partner.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. we had a chapter about that in the book, but it was so mean that we took it out. we were like, but you know, it's like, we're like, look, you wouldn't call somebody who'd drawn a bunch of blueprints for houses that never got built. You wouldn't call them an architecture guru. You know, that's, you can't be a guru at something that you've never, you know, like conquered.
Right.
So, you know, it's, you know, it's an interesting racket. The screenwriting racket. You do need to you know, be ready to take a lot, to not take things personally.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, you said point. As you guys got fired off a guy thing. We got fired off every night of the museum movie. That's crazy. At some point. Many of them we got hired back on because, you know, the trick is be nice when you get fired, which is basically the secret to everything.
Right.
Yeah.
We had there was one moment in the, I don't know if you remember, how much you remember about a guy thing, but there's a crazy brother-in-law, Ray or something. And one of the people, the studio people said, could there be a scene where they got to get Ray? Maybe he's on the Chicago Bears and they have to get him to a game. I'm like, well, yeah, we can write that. It has nothing to do with what's going
that's
on.
That's an entire other movie.
It was crazy.
Yeah. I mean, we can do that, but that's a whole other movie.
Tom, you're so great at playing like condescending characters.
Yes.
But off screen, you are like the nicest guy in the world. I love in the Godfather Green Bay, when Lance Barber went up on stage with all his props and you were bringing him up as the MC, Lance said every time you brought him up, you'd say off camera, staying in character, you said, knock him dead, Tubby. And we would just crack up about that. Like, where does that come from? Why are you so good at playing that role? And is it your favorite kind of role to play?
Yeah, it's always good to play the bad guys or the weird guys. I mean, I've always dreamed of doing like Richard the Third. Yeah.
What's
I cannot prove a lover, I shall prove a villain. But I don't know. There's something more. I said, knock him dead, Chubby, every time.
That's what he said. What do you hope to accomplish? Like, you've written blockbuster, huge box office successes. Mm-hmm. You're a really respected actor, as you say. You've directed and produced, and you know, you're at a point where a lot of guys, you have no idea, by the way, how many guys that I know from the Midwest who would love to live in Wisconsin because they don't have to be in LA. And yeah. So I say,
very
you've,
lucky.
You've
I know
made
how
it.
Lucky I am. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, what do you still want to do, Tom? Like, what do you still hope to accomplish?
Well, I mean, I think if you have the same thing that makes you want to do the stuff that I've done and be as persistent as I've been about it, despite, you know, the enormous heartbreaks of being both a writer and an actor that are, you know, 80% of the job is, you know, consistent heartbreak. But I think the way that my brain is just sort of made up, it's like, I'm just not a person who really like takes breaks or takes even really any time off or like, I'm writing a play right now that I'm super excited about. I'm writing the animated version of my novels for DreamWorks Animation.
Nice.
That hopefully should be coming out in the next 3 to 5 years would be a very good timeline for that. But I'm not a person who can relax. So I just hope I keep finding stuff that keeps piquing my interest,
man.
I guess. Yeah.
I'm sure you will, buddy. That's so great. This has been really fun having you on. And
it's been a blast.
Maybe we'll bump into each other at the House of the Rock or something. Either way, tell your folks I said hello. And,
I certainly shall.
Yeah, please don't be a stranger. Love to have you back sometime if you just want to talk some screenwriting. This is
I would
fun.
Love it.
All right.
We're in the same time zone, so it's the greatest.
Absolutely. Are you, we got a few seconds. Anything you want to promote? Anything coming up you want to remind people
oh,
about?
Oh, geez. I'm, sure. I'm on, what? I'm on Animal Control on Fox.
Oh,
currently.
Fantastic. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so once in a while, I'm not in every single one, but I often show up as Joel McHale's weird, obnoxious brother.
Now that's a good gig. That's awesome, buddy. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thanks, Pete.
Have a great night. A
lot of fun.
All right. Later. See ya. Bye. That's Tom Lennon from Reno 911, the writer of The Pacifier, Night at the Museum, Balls of Fury, Hellboy. Good stuff. Do you have a favorite Tom Lennon movie, Conrad?
Well, I would say Night at the Museum is probably my favorite, but he also plays And Now I Met Your Mother, a German guy.
Oh, that's right.
That's great.
And that's another one of those roles that he just crushes those, man. That's so cool. This was fun. I remember a scene in Reno 911 where he was dangled and he was dressed as a woman hanging out with some prostitutes in an alley. And the other cops come up and they're like, all right, ladies, break it up. And he turns around and they're like, oh, dangle. He's like, I'm working undercover, guys. I got this. You guys can take off. And they're walking away. They're like, isn't this his night off? Like, oh, just really great stuff. And a heck of a good guy. Tom took a couple guys that were in the movie that we were talking about, The Godfather of Green Bay, and when they moved to L.A., he looked out for them and even got them a role in a couple things, which I think is really cool. So good guy. Great to have him on the show. I would also like to thank I'd like to thank you, Conrad. Well, can I do that?
Yeah, I think.
All right. And Tony Boswell, too. And thank you for all your texts and participating in Nightlight. We will be back tomorrow night. This is Pete Schwab and Nightlight. On behalf of Conrad, good night, Wisconsin. Take me to your best friend's house, mama.